House Bill Number 88, Background Checks, Enterprise Technology Services, Ayes 59, Excused 1. Message Number 150, House Bill Number 90, Concealed Weapons, Military Family Applicants, Ayes 59, Excused 1. Message Number 151, House Bill Number 97, Wyoming Uniform Transfers to Minors Act Amendments, Ayes 58, Noes 1, Excused 1. Message Number 148, the following bills passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the votes indicated. House Bill Number 73, Interference with a Person Providing Emergency Services, Ayes 34, Noes 25, Excused 1. House Bill Number 11, Message 152. House Bill Number 11, Discounted Cash Flow Implementation Process, Ayes 38, Noes 21, Excused 1. Message Number 153, House Bill Number 32, Ski Safety Act, Ayes 40, Noes 19, Excused 1. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that. Just a second. Standing committee reports.
January 24, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom is referred Senate File 41, Enterprise Technology Services Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. January 24, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom is referred Senate File 82, Graduation Requirement, CPR, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it return without recommendation. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Landon. Senator Hastert, excused. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at Senator Cole.
I'd like to pull the Senate Education Committee off the floor for about 30 minutes right now while you're in general file, if that's okay.
Certainly, Senator Coe, that's correct, and you can do that. Senator Ron Flater, do you want to get someone else to come up here and do Committee of the Whole?
Well, I think he left me a vote.
No, he left me a vote. I think.
How about Senator Landon? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the current acting chairman of Committee of the Whole has left a proxy vote, so he doesn't necessarily need to be excused. So he can retake the chair.
Okay. I was going to fire him before I knew what was going on.
There you go.
Now, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, now that you've straightened me out, do you have a motion?
I do have a motion, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate re-resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole again.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. That motion has carried. Senator Wasserberger.
Go get him.
Here's your water.
What else do you need?
I'm good. Okay.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 67. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
It is right here. There we go.
Senate File 67, CHIP Program Amendments, an act relating to the Child Health Insurance Program, sponsored by the Labor Committee, was referred to committee number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so the recommendation that Senate File 67 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File
I got you.
Senate File 67, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 3.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, before we go to the Standing Committee Amendment, let me explain something. This bill came through committee the whole week ago, something like that. Got on to second reading and came back. I came back to the chamber a little early after lunch that day and discovered a gaggle or a pride or whatever you want to call them of lobbyists laying in wait for me. And they expressing a deep concern over the underlying program that this bill affects. And the story I heard, we have always run our child health program through a insurance company that's licensed to do business in Wyoming. Was one of the options in the original child health insurance program. We felt it was appropriate to take that, and what they said was, what I heard was the department going out for rebid in the general nature of things. There'd been a rebid submitted by the firm that has been our agent for years. There was no indication of anything going on in committee when we heard the bill the first time. And as soon as it got through second reading here, they got a notice the bid had been rejected. And there was a fear that the department was seeking to turn this into a Medicaid look-alike, which they are empowered to do under the statutes if they can't get a bid from a Wyoming insurer. And it took me a while to figure out what was going on and talk to people. And, Mr. Chairman, you may recall that I had this recommitted from third reading back to the committee. I felt that a public hearing was a good way to deal with the concerns. I'd spoken to the health department director in the hall, and he came into committee and said, look, that wasn't what was going on, that there was a misunderstanding, that the bidding process that they're forced to use because both our state contracting rules require it and because the feds require it forbids the agency from communicating with potential bidders during the time when they're preparing the bid, which is exactly the opposite of how you do a private sector one. You'd want to make sure your bidders understood exactly what you wanted. But the result was, he said, the bid was unresponsive to the needs and the needs for the implementing the section that this bill speaks to. And he thought they could get it all worked out. I think that alleviated a fair number of the concerns. But we still wanted to make sure that we stayed with having a private insurance company licensed to do business in Wyoming, being the ones, Mr. Chairman, that would manage this program for two reasons. One, the Medicaid reimbursement rate is significantly lower than the private insurance reimbursement rate, maybe as much as half. So it would have a big impact on particularly this kid care, and particularly the family doctors and the pediatricians in the state, but also on the hospitals and other institutions, Mr. Chairman. So that was one factor. And secondly, the best figures that we have, and they're old, because they go back to a multi-payer claims database that was operated in the Friedenthal administration. But that showed that for children, the average cost for the health care was, compared to our largest private insurer, state employees, is 1.3 times as high. Kid care children is 1.6 times as high. and Medicaid is 2.7 times as high. So a good deal higher than the arrangement we have now. Now, those figures are old. I think there was some harm done to the kid care program in the past 8 years nationally that may have caused the figures to rise a little bit for them. But that gives you some indication, even with the discrepancy in provider reimbursements, as to how much, by increasing the utilization, going to a Medicaid look like, how much harm it would do. So we thought that would be a fundamental decision that the legislature ought to make if we have to go there. So what we did, Mr. Chairman, and the Standing Committee Amendment has been read in, and I will move it at this point. What we did to the bill is add two provisions. One is we delayed the effective date until after the budget session, March 31st, 2018, which is much longer than we normally use. But our experience has been with the feds, and the health department confirmed it, as long as we're making progress to complying, we aren't likely to have trouble with them. And that has the additional benefit if the requirements change in the next year with the change in administration, we'll have some time to catch up. But we don't have any knowledge that that's likely to happen, but it could. The second and more important thing is we added that this paragraph, which is the heart of the bill on page 3, and you recall from my earlier presentation, that's what is really different here is page 3, those first couple lines, we insert, paragraph shall be effective only if the child insurance program under this act is provided through a private insurance company licensed by the insurance commissioner to write insurance in Wyoming, which is the language from earlier in the act as it is in our green books. So that if we're going to have a fundamental change, Mr. Chairman, with this amendment, it'll come back to the legislature before it gets implemented, and we may have some tough choices to make. But we think with that language that everything will get worked out and resolved, and the program, which has been, in my judgment, quite successful, will continue to operate and continue to operate efficiently and effectively. So, Mr. Chairman, that's what we did. The amendments are really now at the heart of the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions on them and urge their adoption.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 67. Is there any further questions or comments?
Question.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt this Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 67, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the favorable recommendation of Senate File 67, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 67 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 48. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 48, Farm Loan Program Amendments, an act relating to farm loans, sponsored by Senator Imrich. It was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Imrich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman. Re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Haskert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hicks.
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 48 do pass, and for an explanation of the bill, I'll turn that over to Senator Imrich.
Senator Imrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 48 merely goes into the Farm Loan and Agricultural Lending statutes and amends to take the amount of total money able to be loaned from $800,000 to $1 million. And then in the statute 1134.117, it goes into the total value of outstanding loans will go from 10% to 20% of the total amount of farm loan investment authorized. This is a program that was authorized, I believe, if my notes are correct, 1921. It has been used for agriculture and land purchases for beginning agriculturalists and those in situations where they cannot get regular type loans. The total amount of money loaned out varies depending upon interest rates because they're based upon 10-year treasury notes and 8% or depending upon which program you're after. So just because of inflation, we are asking that these figures be increased to $1 million and to 20%. The total amount of money that has been authorized for this program is $275 million. And I say, and as I have said, it's a well-used, depending upon interest rates, well-used program and has had very, very low default or delinquency rates. So I would please ask that when the Senate votes that it does so favorably. I'll stand for any questions.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I rise to declare conflict of interest in this bill. Mr. Chairman, my family ranching corporation has had one of these loans in the past. It was extraordinarily useful for us, really helped the operation out a little bit. We did pay that off. We don't have one now, but it's conceivable we might in the future. And, Mr. Chairman, I feel I ought to declare a conflict in those circumstances. I do represent a largely urban constituency, and I don't want to inhibit my family, and all of us are minority shareholders. The ownership is distributed amongst the family. But I don't want the others to be inhibited in seeking one of these as if it's appropriate, because I might have voted on it down here. I think it's better to not vote and avoid that whole thing. And I had done that previously, Mr. Chairman, and was very glad when press criticism did arise over members who had voted for it and then took a farm loan. So I will declare a conflict of interest on this, Mr. Chairman, in spite of being part of a large class.
Conflict noted, Senator Scott. Is there any further debate? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation that Senate File 48, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 48 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 106. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 106, Obsolete Reporting Requirements, Repeal and Modification, an act relating to government record-keeping and reporting, sponsored by Senator Scott, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
What is your pleasure, Senator Scott? There is a standing committee amendment.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report to do so the recommendation that Senate File 106 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File 106, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 8.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, in committee, when we examined the repealers carefully, we found in the process we had made one mistake in asking for an item to be repealed. It wasn't appropriate, and we corrected that. And what this does is remove that item from the repealers. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We are on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, number 1 to Senate File 106, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let me explain this bill. Mr. Chairman, 2 years ago, your Joint Labor Committee, at one of its interim meetings, heard the director of the Department of Health complaining about the number of reports that the department was doing and how nobody seemed to be ever reading them. And that was in accord with the experience, Mr. Chairman, that most of the members of the committee had, that the reports were in fact being unread, with one exception. We had one member that was reading them. And we decided it was too much work to prepare all these reports that nobody was looking at. So we brought a bill and convinced you all, and the bill passed, to get rid of a lot of reports for the health department. And seems to have worked, Mr. Chairman. So as the campaign progressed and I got confident I was coming back here, I called up Department of Family Services and said, would you like us to do the same thing for you? And I got an enthusiastic response, followed by a letter from the Department of Family Services saying, eliminate these reports. And, Mr. Chairman, I went through that. In some cases, the elimination is simply by repeal. Other cases, it's by amendment. And they asked to get rid of a few reports that and planning requirements that cover well beyond family services. And I didn't think that was quite appropriate. So what I did was change the shall to may and say if the governor tells them to, or we, the legislature, in a budget bill or some other enactment, tell them to, then they've got to do that set of planning and reports, but otherwise not. And I could go through these in detail, with Mr. Chairman, but for now, I just want to quote the director of Family Services in the committee hearing. He said, with the cutbacks, we've got more mission than we've got resources, and getting rid of reports that nobody's looking at, nobody's reading, and planning documents that we aren't using will help us deal with that problem, and that's what this bill does. Mr. Chairman, it won't solve all the problems, but it's at least a small step to help with the, you know, they really do have cutbacks there and more mission than cutbacks, and this will help get rid of some work that doesn't need to be done, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there any further questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 106, do pass, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 106 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 107. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 107, Probate Code Amendments, an act relating to the probate, sponsored by Senator Perkins, was referred to Committee Number 1, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. There is a standing committee amendment. Senator Christensen.
Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, and do so with a favorable consideration.
It's on.
With a favorable consideration on Senate File 107.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What you've got before you is Senate File 107, Probate Code Amendments. I will, if we can, I'll deal with the Standing Committee Amendment here in a minute. Proceeding through and just going through the bill, what we've got here are just some fairly simple probate.
Senator Perkins?
Yes.
Can we have the reading clerk read in the amendment?
Sure. You're the chairman. You can do whatever you want, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senate File 107, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 19.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. With that, I'll go ahead and move Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 107 and ask the body to vote do pass. Sir. With you, so back to what I said before, I'll get to that Standing Committee Amendment if I can in a moment, Mr. Chairman. What you have in Senate File 107 are just some probate code amendments. There's a couple things that we made a significant change to what's called sometimes called summary probate a few years ago, and in doing that, we found I and a couple other people who practice here came across a few tweaks that we needed to make in order to make this thing work the way it was intended. So what we have is, again, you're talking about in at the bottom of page 1, going to page 2 is the summary probate code amendments. This is where you can deal with real property, which can also include, which could be homes or it could be mineral interests. The total amount of the estate we're dealing with is less, of the probate estate that we're dealing with is less than $200,000. And so we're doing a couple things in here. The first thing, what had happened was in a regular full-blown probate, you have the opportunity, you provide notice to creditors and others, and they have a time to file a claim in the estate. We had provided for that same requirement, which the U.S. Supreme Court had said was required by everyone to provide notice to creditors. And so when we revised this simplified probate section a few years ago, we provided for that notice to creditors and kind of put a 30-day period in here, which they had time to respond. One of the things that we did is in a regular probate, if you don't respond by a certain time, there's a bar that goes up, and a few agencies are exempted, like the Internal Revenue Service, are never barred by anything. If you have a mortgage, they're not barred. But if you have normal creditors or if you miss the deadline of filing these claims, they're barred from asserting those claims in the probate. Has come across that it occurs to us, and we've seen that there's not that bar in the summary probate provision. So you file this, and so you could be ready. You're going through the summary probate. You've exceeded the 30 days, and all of a sudden a claim shows up from a creditor. There's no choice but for everything to stop, back up, and deal with the claim from the creditor, which otherwise wouldn't be made timely. So what this... The first thing that this bill does, it creates this chance and creates a bar so that if a creditor doesn't file a claim in the summary probate within the 30-day period everyone this process is supposed to have, and they're required to file, but there's no penalty for not doing it. So all we do is we create a bar date in here and create so that any objection to the application shall be filed before the expiration of 30 days after mailing. And untimely objection is barred. So that's the first thing it does. It creates a bar for so that if you don't make these objections timely, the estate can go ahead and be settled. The other thing that it does is the other thing you find is that there's been some instances where someone has filed both in this and other probates. A creditor has you send out notice. You're required to send out notice to all creditors that you're reasonably able to be aware of. And so you go out and you start filing notices to creditors. In some cases, you may file a notice to an agent or an attorney for a creditor. And then we've seen some instances where the attorney or the agent didn't relay that on or didn't file timely. And so then the creditor comes back and says, you didn't notify me. You notified my agent or my attorney, but you didn't notify me. And so they've tried to extend or get around the filing dates or these bar dates that they were required to file their claims by. And so what you see in the middle of page 2, the new language in page 2, which is that subsection J, just makes it clear that notice to the agent or attorney of any party entitled to notice under this section is notice to that party. And so that's the second thing this does is just clarifies for anybody that when you provide notice to the person, to their agent or their attorney, that it's notice to them for purposes of this. So then you see in 2.7 on the bottom of page 3 and over to the top over 4, that's 2.7.205. That's in the normal probate statute, the full-blown probate statute. The same thing. You see a new subsection D at the top of 4 that notice to the agent or attorney of any party entitled to notice under this section is notice to that party. So we're just creating these consistent parallels between the summary probate proceedings and the full probate proceedings. The final thing the bill does was something that was brought to me by my good friend from the senator from Evanston and south the western Wyoming. And what they found there was that there's still some judges around the state. They had some folks come to him and tell there's still some judges around the state that in 27812, which is on page 4 of the bill, that there's still some judges that are requiring people who file probates to file a certificate of no tax, or there's no tax due, from our state tax department, our state tax commissioner. Mr. Chairman, that's Wyoming got rid of its inheritance tax back in about 1998. It phased out. As of 2005, it was fully phased out. There is no inheritance tax or estate tax in the state of Wyoming anymore. So you're requiring, in some instances, judges are requiring attorneys and individuals who are probated in states to provide a no tax due certificate when our law says there will never be a tax or inheritance tax due in the state of Wyoming. So what we're doing in the problem of four is you see that the court just finds there's no inheritance tax due or estate tax chargeable against the state. We're excusing the filing of that receipt. And then in section two, which is at the bottom of page four, the repeater is a requirement. The requirement is that the tax is the requirement that you get a no tax due certificate from the commissioner of taxation, which which we just don't do anymore. So that's what the bill does. The amendment came in, and there was an unintended consequence from the wording that we had in the very first thing we did with the amendment. So what we did in the amendment, if you go back to page 2, the intent was to wrap this up till you file a petition in the summary probate. You file a petition to have this probate done, this abbreviated probate, and then you have to file in the newspaper. After that, you're required to send a notice to all creditors and other people, including the state of Wyoming, that they have within 10 days of that filing that they've got time to file, and you're telling them that they should have it filed by the end of this 30-day period from the first date of publication. What the bill is that I didn't catch it until it went until just before it went to committee is we inadvertently extended that 30 days because the wording had it extended 30 days from the date of the mailing when it should be 30 days from the date of first publication. And so what the amendment does, standing committee amendment does, is it just deletes 30 and inserts the later of 20 days, or it would be 30, or it'd be the later of 20 days from or after 30 days after the date of first publication. The point is that just to tie it all, so you've got 30 days from the date of first publication. The only time that would ever be extended beyond that 30 days is if you didn't do what you're required to do, which is mail that notice out to creditors within the first 10 days. So the point is to tie it all together and to keep the 30-day limit that was put on when you did this before. And that's what the amendment does, is simply makes that consistent so that it's a 30-day requirement, although no creditor would ever get less than 20 days of notice to file in one of these cases. With that, that's the amendment. So if there's any questions about the amendment, I would stand for those questions now.
Question. We are on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 107. Are there any questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 107, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. We are back on the bill. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's the bill and the amendment. We ask your favorable consideration.
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion. Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 107, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 107 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 87. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 77. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 77, Capital Oversight Group Membership, an act relating to state property and buildings, sponsored by Senator Bebout. Was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee whole rise and report to do with a favorable recommendation that do pass on the Senate File 77. There's a standing committee amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the standing committee amendment number one?
Senate File 77, standing committee amendment number one, page one, lines 7 through 9.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would move that standing committee amendment. Members of the Senate, I'd like to briefly explain the bill and then talk a little bit about the standing committee amendment. What this bill does, and it deals with a capital oversight group membership, and currently that membership is comprised of the governor, the president of the Senate, and majority and minority floor leaders of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, and majority and minority floor leaders of the House, and a member of both the House and the Senate appointed by the Speaker and the President. And what this bill does, Mr. Chairman, if you look on page 2, the real crux of the bill starts on line 12 through line 14, where we're adding two persons appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate pursuant to 2012-101 with experience regarding the project. The purpose of this bill, members of the Senate, is to add two really knowledgeable people potentially to help us as we move forward on our capital restoration project to be able to keep that project on time and on budget. And that's essentially what it does, Mr. Chairman. With that, there's some changes to the bill that the Standing Committee Amendment does, and I'd like to go through that because it has a significant impact on the bill, Mr. Chairman. If you look on page 1, lines 7 through 9 and through group on 10, that is deleted. If you go to page 2, you look on line 2 where we delete B, and then at the end of that sentence, on line 2, we take out N and delete 95112F, replace it with IS. And then we go down to page, or on line 14, we add the following language. And remember the Senate, this is important. We insert the word, the governor shall appoint members under this paragraph from a list of four names submitted to him jointly by the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House of Representatives. Members appointed under this section shall be non-voting members of the oversight group and shall not be included for purposes of determining a quorum of the oversight group. Then what we do, Mr. Chairman, is through the rest of the bill on the bottom of page 2, lines 16 through 22, and on page 3, lines 9 through 22, is we delete any reference to that the two appointed members will be voting on this committee. So, Mr. Chairman, with that would explain the standing committee amendment. What it does, members of the Senate, it says that out of those two that we have an opportunity that will go on the board, we receive four names from the governor, and we select two of those people. And he selects two. We give him four names. He selects two with Senate confirmation. And that those two members will not have any voting rights on that committee. The last thing this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is grant them per diem and mileage. With that, I'll be glad to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We are on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 77. Is there any questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 77, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 77 has passed. We are back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question I have in all this, and I apologize for not looking at it very closely, but I'm wondering whether or not, in light of the problems that we had at the prison, not having oversight by qualified people that understood the building trade. I mean, we had the oversight when we were building that Rawlins prison, but even with the redundancy that was built in, we still had a problem. And I didn't know in this whole process, Capitol Building Commission or the State Building Commission, this particular committee, how many members have the ability to walk on a building site project, take a look at it, make a determination as to whether it's being done right, whether it's on time, whether the right materials are being used, and what kind of oversight that this committee is going to add to that particular problem, which has been wanting in previous construction efforts of the state.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think there's any point in talking about the previous committee because we're looking forward. And what we will have on that committee is you'll have the leadership of the House, the President, Majority Leader, Majority Floor Leader, and the Minority Floor Leader. And I've been on this committee since the inception, and I do have some experience in this area. I've been involved in building and different things in the construction industry most of my life. And from the House side, you'll have the Speaker and you'll have the Majority Floor Leader over there, and both of them have had some experience. But the whole point of this is to add two people that will have more outside experience than we have on it to bring that expertise to the Oversight Committee. That's the purpose of it, to expand it by two, so I think we have better information and knowledge. And my colleague from Goshen County, this has not been an easy project. You know, there's no question about that. And it's been a struggle since day one. And one of the things we did, I think, to get it back on track was we brought in an outside firm with extensive experience in it that reports directly to this committee as our representative in this project. And so we have monthly meetings, we have updates, we have complete information as to the status, what's going on, where we are, and what's happening, including our critical path diagrams, budgets, amounts, change orders, all those various things. So I think by adding these two people, whoever they might be, they'll be experienced, will be one of the prime conditions of why we're doing it.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I knew what we were doing here, but with that explanation, we've hired an outside group with all this expertise to come in here, is the way I understand it, to provide this expertise to the committee now. So I'm curious as when it says expertise regarding the project, if this isn't what the firm that we've already hired to do, what kind of expertise are these two new individuals that would be appointed to this committee going to bring if the current firm we hired is inadequate and if the members of the existing committee lack the expertise? So what specific level of expertise are we looking at? Is it geotechnical, architectural, construction management? I guess that's my question.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, Senator Ebel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good questions. And first of all, the outside firm that we've hired, it has a tremendous amount of experience in this project, but what we need to do is they report to not only this committee but a subcommittee. The purpose of this is to have a relationship between people who have been involved since day one on this project, and it's their historical knowledge that they have and they bring to the table. And it would be, if depending on who this list might be that we would appoint, it could very well be people that have been involved since day one on the project, and they know the project backwards, forwards, and sideways, and we sure like to have them involved. So that's the purpose of it. It doesn't in any way, shape, or form take away from the independent group we have, but we'll have more expertise on the committee to work with them. And we also have a subcommittee that deals with the intricacies of the building itself. We talk about all the different things that have to go in the Capitol, things like the carpet, the windows, different things. And this expertise that we're looking to bring in is very knowledgeable in that area, and they've been on the project since day one. So we're going to have a historical continuation of knowledge on the project.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and with that explanation, now the question that pops into my mind now, do we already know who these individuals are?
Well, Mr. Chairman, no, we've got a good idea. I'm not sure who the Speaker will appoint. I've got some ideas in my mind, but the Governor will pick them, and then we have confirmation of the Senate.
Is there any further comments? Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, it seems like in the past, some of our building projects, the problem has not been in the design and the execution. The problem has been in the inspection of the contractor's work. So I think this will help, and two people probably could help the committee if they don't have the expertise on board. But I think the thing they need to worry about is who's going to inspect the project when the contractor's actually doing it, and maybe that expertise will come on to the committee at this time. Thanks.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's a little bit of miscommunication that's going on in here. The expertise for inspection and to hold the contractor to the standards and the individual contract, that there is a firm that has that's been hired that's an owner's representative. So his only job is to look after the owners to make sure that the architects and the general contractor are doing what they're supposed to do. The firm that's been hired outside that has expertise actually has engaged in and has experience in refurbishing and redoing and some other capitals around the country and some other states. And so that's the technical expertise, the geotechnical expertise, and the expertise to inspect and try and make sure that the general contractor and the subs are doing what they're supposed to do and doing it according to spec, and also monitor the budget and help provide this oversight committee with that technical expertise to carry this out. What this does is, if you look who's on that capital oversight committee, which I have the misfortune to now be appointed to that capital oversight committee by virtue of being a majority floor leader. Other than being angry about this project for most of the time, like many of you, you know, I've actually kind of really not really wanted to pay very much attention to this project because every time I did, it made me angry. That being said, now I find myself where I wished I had paid more attention. And the purpose of these two individuals, it's going to be somebody who is most likely on there before, although not necessarily. It could be some other individuals have been involved. Is to provide that institutional knowledge and in a continuum of what were the goals, where do we start, where did we go wrong before, how do we make sure that we don't repeat those same mistakes. And so, as you have probably half of us that will be going on this capital oversight committee, we've been drafted or conscripted into this effort, and so it's to provide that institutional knowledge to help those of us who are going to be new to this process to understand and go forward. That's the purpose of it. So just wanted to make sure that we understand that they're not going to have inspectors that are going to be out there. It's going to make sure that the plans that were done initially, we have, like I say, we're paying a significant amount of money to somebody who's got a tremendous amount of technical expertise will actually be holding the general contractor's feet to the fire.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. I wonder if there's any idea, at least from the President of the Senate, who we might appoint, if that's a legislator or an outside expert or someone who's been on the committee before, or are we really looking for expertise, or are we looking for people that know what the committee's doing?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, all of the above.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm reluctant on this issue. I'm one who has voted against this project at every opportunity. And I really wonder, I think it's a disaster from the word go. And I don't like the design, and I don't like anything about the project. I really wonder, is bringing in two more individuals to this state going to help us out any at all?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I realize my colleague from Natrona County has had some concerns about this project, and I've heard those concerns before, and many of them were very valid. And I will tell members of the Senate that this has not been one of my favorite projects either, and it's been a tough deal from the get-go. But what we have done is when we got involved in this early on through the Oversight Committee, we made some really good decisions. And one of the best ones we did, I think, was to bring in the owner's representative to come in and represent us so we know exactly what's going on and to try to keep the project on budget and on time. And we are there. There's no way we're looking back now. We're going down that road. And so the challenge for the Senate, for the House, and for this legislature, and for this Oversight Committee, is to be able to get this project done on time, on budget, and complete it. There's no question that the capital needed to be looked at. And if you've gone over there, and I would encourage all of you that have not gone over there to please go take a look, and you'll see some of the things we've uncovered, like the underpinning that we've discovered in the basement of the capital, where I'm not sure if you understand what underpinning is, but we have a drilling rig, and we go down in the basement, and we drill down, and we get down to a sandrock where we can stabilize and place the underpin. We have to pump grout into that to underpin the foundation. We've seen some places where that that's failing. You know, you look at the electrical, and you've seen some of the pictures of the electrical. We look at the plumbing. You know, the fire issue is huge. You know, there's no way that we could really deal with a major fire in that capital. I don't remember for sure, but I think the last time we did something that was 100 years ago or some other than just kind of maintaining it. We really needed to get into the capital. The Hirschler building was one that, quite frankly, I was outvoted. I thought we weren't quite ready for that, but the majority rules, and we're moving ahead. So I feel like we have in place an owner's rep that's going to really perform well for us. The oversight committee knows what we're doing, and some of those that aren't really excited to now be on that committee, we will make sure that they are really involved, and we'll do that. But I welcome all of you to come over and look at this because it's a very important project for Wyoming. You know, you don't forget one of the main reasons we did this is because of the lack of committee rooms. And if you looked at the way we used to operate in the House and the Senate both, we had small rooms. If you look at the design, we've come a long ways toward taking care of the committee rooms. In defense of the Hirschler building, there was some very significant structural deficits in that, and we had to fix those. So we're in the middle of this right now. There's no turning back. We need to perform. We need to be on time and on budget. And by doing this, I think we bring some institutional knowledge to this that will help us perform better.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and I think that's a good idea, actually, institutional knowledge when we're talking $300 million is probably an appropriate thing to do. The question I have, specific on page 2, so what we're really bringing these individuals back on for is their knowledge and their institutional ability and the project. That's probably a really good thing. I just wonder whether what's the purpose of how now giving them voting membership. Well, the way I read that, it says.
Is it?
Okay, maybe some clarification on that, or I must be misreading that.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good point, and we amended to take that out. They will be non-voting members.
Is there any further debate? Are you, Senator Myers?
Not debate, Mr. Chairman, just clarification. You also took out the change order. Dollars that were in here. I didn't know whether there was change order dollars someplace else in the whole process. And, you know, even though that we've got some folks that are going to be on this, and I'm sure some folks are going to be appointed to this committee from the legislature that has, you know, some level of expertise, it would give me a lot more comfort if this committee had some funds to oversee the overseer, because there's so many problems that can go wrong with foundations. I just see we're putting the wings out there on that Hirschler building where we've got foundations that have been in the ground for 50 years, and I just have a nightmare of that the whole darn thing just collapsing on us sometime and some other just disaster that's going to happen in this project, because it has seemed like it's been a struggle. And I, you know, this gives me some comfort, but I'd see a lot more comfort if you guys had some expert that could, you know, help interpret what the expert is telling you. That's over the firm that you saw that was overseeing the firm that's supposed to be the expert on it. I don't think you can have enough redundancy, in any of these projects going forward, because we've made way, way, way too many mistakes in every building we've built in the last 40 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bebop.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to answer one of the questions and a lot of the comments my colleague from Goshen County made, you know, I will not argue with him, but what we've done in the Standing Committee Amendment, we haven't deleted the fact that we will have the oversight of change orders. All we did was take out the language that said the new potential members would be voting and non-voting. That's what we did.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, just one correction of fact. I do not believe the Hirschler building is more than 50 years old, because I have the distinct memory of voting against building the Hirschler building in the first place, and that was not any 50 years ago.
Senator Scott, you're looking amazingly young today. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I stand kind of in a strange deal listening to all of a lot of the debates been about justification whether we do it or not. We're down the road, and I get it. I really do question what two more citizen members, whether they've been there or not, at this point, really honestly bring to it, other than possibly costing more money because they suggest changes to what we're already doing. Because we're really down to the point, we, as far as I understand it, we've got the plans and we're building. It's not a matter of huge amounts of expertise. That expertise came in when they brought the outside people in to kind of oversee it. And I really do question whether two more people bring any real honest value to the state as far as where this goes down the road beyond what the committee does. We've got a lot of institutional knowledge on the committee. I think we all know what we're talking about on the other two. And I question what they actually honestly bring beyond where we've been at.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's the main reason we're talking about doing this. The only institutional knowledge we have because of the turnover would be myself and minority floor leader and the governor. So there is already tremendous turnover, and we just feel like that we need to have that additional institutional knowledge. But more importantly, this is not done. We still have drawings that are being completed. We have things that have to go out to bid. We have selections that have to be made. We have to do a lot of the intricacies of doing it as well that take more than just, myself and others that are not there. And these people that we are thinking about potentially being involved will be in the area and will have hands-on experience to be participating with our owner's representative and giving us monthly reports. So I do really think it's important that we have them involved.
Senator Kinski, are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 77, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 77 has passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This body moves quickly and does fast work. There was one bill that was on there earlier with the defeat of the Senate resolution earlier on third reading today. That bill's been pulled off and will not likely come back up. So with that, I would move that the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion of Mr. Majority Floor Leader. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
The reading clerk, please read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 108, do pass amended. Senate File 72, do pass. Senate File 67, do pass amended. Senate File 48, do pass. Senate File 106, do pass amended. Senate File 107, do pass amended. Senate File 77, do pass amended. Senator Wasserberger, Chairman.
Senator Wasserberger.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That report is adopted. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, January 24, 2017, message number 154. Mr. President, the bill below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 80, Transportation Network Companies, ayes 52, noes 6, excused 2. Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
With that order of business, introduction of Senate files, Senate File 129, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 129, Sexual Assault School Employee, sponsored by Senator Boner.
Senate File 129 will refer to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 123, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 123, School Nutrition Pilot Project, sponsored by Senator Boner.
Senate File 123 will be referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senator Burns, are you going to give us a little update on the goldenrod?
Mr. President, I can.
Member of the Senate, you all should have your goldenrod in your folder. Please get them out. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I guess the first thing to tell you all is on the front page, you'll see a column to the right with all the numbers on it. That's the 17-18 biennium. That's the Gov's rec. And starting next week when the appropriation bill comes out, there'll be an additional column on the right that will give you all the changes that we have made in the supplemental budget. The supplemental budget, because of the volume, because of the drop in revenues, has been much more extensive than I think just about any other supplemental budget I've ever dealt with anywhere or that I've seen. We ended up opening up every agency in government, which also for the floor's edification means that just about any agency can be opened up by a second reading amendment too. So just to give you a few of the highlights, and Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I hope this is what you were hoping for here. If you go down to about halfway
Senator
down the
Burns,
page.
Just 1 second to interrupt you. Mr. Vice President, would you come up to the chair, please? Go ahead, Senator Burns.
About halfway down the page where you have the general fund budget reserve account, and it goes into detail on pages 2 and 3. This is from the Gov's rec, and you see a $53,600,000 surplus. Well, that is kind of phantom-like. The governor did a couple of things. One of the things he did was he recognized and profiled undistributed realized capital gains. That's never been done before. And the problem with capital gains, and this is something that we're going to have to end up adjusting to at one point or another, in the history of the budget of the state of Wyoming, because we've had fixed income, we knew where the money was coming from, so we could pretty much predict where it was going to come from. In terms of mineral revenues and so forth. But now with the growth over the last 10 years or so of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund and some of the other trust funds, we're getting capital gains. And the problem with capital gains is you don't necessarily know exactly what you're going to be getting. We have unrealized capital gains. We also have a bunch of unrealized capital losses. And we're all familiar with how volatile the market can be. So it gets a little dicey when you start profiling capital gains in your profile. One of the other things that the governor didn't do is, and you look at the line below that, statutory reserve, he did not put in the $104,550,000 for the statutory reserve. That is something the legislature has always done and always profiled. So we put that in, and the Appropriations Committee put that in the bill, in the supplemental budget bill, you'll see. So you look below the line below that, that ends up with a structural deficit of $50 million, and that's what we were tasked to address. We can't go into detail, all the detail, but I can give you some of the things that we've been doing. Go down to the bottom of the page, the last figure you see there, and that is how much has been spent in the 17-18 biennium so far of the LISRA, of the basically the rainy day fund or the legislative statutory reserve account. That's the biennial figure. For anybody who's interested, that works out to a 9% burn rate. So that's pretty much on target with what we had in mind. If you go to the second page, you can see the beginning balance, and then you go down to the appropriations, and going about halfway down there, well, most of that stuff was 2016, was already in the budget. You get down to just where you see 2017 general session, and this is what will be changing day in and day out, because LSO's policy is not to profile it until it has passed at least a committee of the whole of the House of Origin. And then you'll start to see the profile come in. So this changes day in and day out. So you see most of what's been passed, and some of it is House, like HB 11. Some of it is Senate, like Senate File 81, the Circuit Court judges' salaries, things like that. If you go to the third page, and we're getting into some of the funds, some of the accounts, the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, which is the middle there, you see the current balance, and that is our rainy day account. That's what we're depending on while we're hopefully just bottoming out. And you see the balance there is almost $1.5 billion. That started out as $1.9 2 years ago. And also, you can also see with the governor also, again, profiled undistributed realized capital gains. Go to the next page, and page four, that's education. One of the aspects we should note on where you see about a quarter of the way down, you see appropriations. And you see $1.6 billion. That is the education budget. But right below that, $72,550,000. That's something we've had to appropriate to put in the supplemental budget. That is what the school system is short from when the legislature passed the budget last year, again, because of falling revenues. The other thing of note, I think, is down when you see school capital construction account, that's frankly kind of self-explanatory, the permanent land fund holding account, and you see a figure there, $570,874,000. That's the permanent land fund reserve account. That is what will be drained. That is part of what's going to cause, that's part of the funding that we've got the structural deficit coming next year in education spending, and a whole bunch of people are working on that. Go to page five, and you've got the Common School Permanent Land Fund down. These are the various funds you've got. And then on the last page, page six, and this is a good illustration of the snapshot aspect of the goldenrod. You see a water development account 1, 2, and 3 going down. Now, what you see profiled so far are only the Senate files, because that's the only bill that's passed Committee of the Whole so far. And there's two omnibus water bills that come through, one on the House, one on the Senate. And one is the planning, and the other is actually the construction bill. This year, the Senate handled the planning bill, and that's what you see profiled there. So you see the total, for instance, on water development account 1, you see the total balance available. This is after the bills, after Senate File 56, of $49 million. Well, that's because we haven't seen the construction omnibus water bill yet. That's only just passed committee, I think, yesterday in appropriations. So they've got 3 days. Well, it'll come up on Committee of the Whole, I think, tomorrow there. Then you'll see these profiles change dramatically, because that's the big account. That's the big spending. And, Mr. President, I hope that's kind of the oversight that you were hoping for.
Questions, Senator? Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. And members of the Senate, just a couple more things that I think is pretty important that we talk about when we look at the goldenrod. And keep in mind that for the last three fiscal years, we spent, in terms of savings and transfers, $1.2 billion. Just think about that number. In savings and transfers, the last three fiscal years, that would be one fiscal year that we haven't got into yet, starting July 1, and goes to June 30th of 2018, it's $1.2 billion. And where you see that on your goldenrod and the significance of it, the transfers on the front page, if you look at the 2016 budget bill, the interfund loan, that's a 1% severance tax that before this period of time and in this budget has not been utilized to to help with our general fund. That had been put into our permanent fund to grow that fund. That's a significant thing to consider. The other thing, and the chairman of the Appropriations Committee mentioned that the reserve account, the LISRA account, if you will, for education has been completely depleted. That $565 million is gone. And the other thing that I would also bring to your attention on the bottom of the front page is $325 million out of LISRA. And, you know, there's a statute that says, I believe, we spend 10% a biennial budget. And we started out at, I think we had $1.9 million in there. So I believe we're a little over on that. But that's okay because we put $104 million of that, as the chairman mentioned, into the statutory reserve from the LISRA account. So that's an offset. I just wanted everybody to know and to look at that. What, of course, you don't see here anywhere is what we all hear about, which is the $1.5 billion that we're looking at with the education and the K through 12 Foundation program.
Further questions, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I'm really concerned that now the governor is profiling unrealized capital gains. I guess we showed him the light a few years ago when we started spending money that we didn't have. The good senator from Carbon County tried to rein us in a little bit. All we could do is cut back a little bit out of, I think, the golf course for the university in Wyoming, and then that was put back in on the House. But, Mr. Vice President, this is a road that, you know, it's the old proverbial camel's nose under the tent. I think it's time to restake the tent. We never had any problems with budget shortfalls before because we didn't spend money we didn't have. And now when we started spending phantom money 3 years ago, and now the governor's profiling phantom money, we're going to continue to dig the hole deeper. And we have to get back to some sound principles of budgeting. Only budgeting money that's actually available that we know that's going to be available. It was always nice to come back the next session when we had that surprise funds that came in that was usually somewhere between $200 and $400 million that we didn't spend because it wasn't realized in that biennium. But it was there for us to consider the next biennium. But we've gotten into a habit of spending money we don't have and profiling money we don't have. If we continue to do that, and if we continue to have automatic appropriations, like the money that's automatically appropriated into the LSRA and the SIPA accounts that's supposed to, by law, go into the general fund, but we have an automatic statutory appropriation that snaps it up before we can even go through the appropriation process and look at it, we're not doing our constituents a service. We're doing them a disservice. And we're going to have to start getting our budgeting act in order and only spending money that we actually have and realize it. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we've gone down this path for the last 3 years, but we're going to have a serious discussion about how we can clean up the spaghetti problem that we have of all the tips and the tilts. I'd like to see whether JAC could give us a spaghetti chart as far as all the tips and tilts and the interfund transfers so you can see it on a graphic basis rather than just numbers on a chart. I think that would help people understand about all of the shell games that we've played with AML funds, with all of the interfund transfers. So everybody understands what the JAC understands, and so we can actually get our hands around this budget and start budgeting in a prudent manner. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Further comments on the budget, Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, I have one question, and it relates on page 4 down at the bottom to that $570 million in the holding account there. My understanding is it was stated that money was gone. Am I right in thinking that that's the money that we're using to get through the biennium we're in right now, and the money is still there, but we have allocated it for spending, and when this biennium is over, then it's gone and drained? And Mr. Vice President, my question is that a correct understanding, or has it already been been expended as opposed to just being appropriated.
Somebody have an answer for Senator Bebout, President Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. That's exactly correct. That is in this biennial budget we're in, and we utilize that in the school foundation program to come up with the numbers that you see here. So that will go to zero for this biennium.
Further comments, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just again, we're giving you a lot of 30,000-foot look down on this. One of the things to keep in mind, with all due respect to the governor, was just before the session started, it was a headline in the Casper paper that the governor says he didn't think we needed any more cuts. And frankly, leadership and your appropriations committee respectfully disagree with him, and that's exactly what we're in the process of doing. When this bill comes out onto the floor, it'll be a week from Monday, I think it is, a week from this coming Monday. We'll spend a day explaining in the bill. We'll go through the bill. You'll have a cheat sheet knowing exactly what we did. And then the next day, we'll start on second reading amendments. And if, Mr. President, if I recall, there were going to be 2 days of second reading amendments?
No.
Or just one? Oh, we're going to skip a day. There's going to be 1 day of second reading amendments. Then we're going to skip a day. Everybody has all this time to look over and approach anybody on the Appropriations Committee and ask what we did. And then there'll be a day. Then there'll be time for third reading amendments. So we're not shy. We can't afford to be shy. And with that, good luck to all of us.
Further comments. Senator Hicks.
Just a quick question, if Chairman of Appropriations can give us. So when you're going through this process right now, so what is the target that we're trying to get to the point where we can balance this budget for this last biennial year? Is it $60 million, $80 million, $70 million? I understand it's a 30,000 foot, but get me close, if you would, please.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, if you look on page one, it's that $50,861,000. That is the structural deficit, and our goal is to hopefully cut our way down to that so we end up with a balanced budget as we're supposed to do. And a number of the cuts that we are in the process of making also would be carryover, so that the $50 million that we're cutting here hopefully is going to be $100 million in the next biennium. Oh, and one other point, Mr. Vice President, to the good senator from LaGrange. One of the things that we did in the markup is we suspended the tips that he was worried about, that where money was automatically flowing into the permanent mental trust fund and the common school permanent land fund. Part of our bill is we suspended those tips.
Further comments on the budget? Seeing none, Mr. President? Okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Vice President. On that cheery note, we will move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Wednesday, January the 25th of 2017.
Announcement, Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., Jonah Room S27, which seems to be our normal committee room. Senate File 89, Presumptive Disability for Firefighters. Senate File 111, Nurse Practice Act Revisions.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number 8, Transportations, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment, Wednesday, January 25th, in Jonah 27, S27, to consider the following bills. Senate File 57, Motor Vehicle Franchise Exceptions. Senate File 109, Auto Cycles.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Wednesday, January 25th, 8 a.m. at Jonah Room, S18, to consider the following bills. Senate File 133, Postmortem Despoiling Penalties. Senate File 113, Felony Fleeing or Eluding Police. Senate File 115, Malicious Cruelty to Animals. And Senate File 61, County Attorney Salaries.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number 6, Travel Recreation, will meet Thursday morning at 8 a.m., General Room S-27, to consider Senate File 25, continued from January 14th. That's Wildlife Location and Research Information Confidentiality. Senate File 120, Mentor Antelope Hunting Voucher, continued from January 24th. And Senate File 126, Guides and Outfitters Penalties.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, January 25th at 1 p.m. down at the Appropriations Committee Room, L55, where we will take up Senate File 136, Energy Science Stipends and Fellowships.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Vice President, your committee, Agriculture, State Public Lands and Water Committee, committee number 5, will be meeting at 20 till 4 in 15 minutes in room S-27 to take up Senate File 103, Water Project Repayment, Senate File 110, Unlawful Use of Water, and Senate File 119, Grand Teton National Park, Transfer of State Lands.
Senator Westberger.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee, Minerals Number 9, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, January 25th, 2017, at 12:30 p.m. in Jonah Room S-18 to consider the following bills. Senate Joint Resolution Number 7, Depositories for State Funds Constitutional Amendment, and Senate File 132, Endow Initiative.
Any further announcements? Seeing none, you've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Senate is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, the 25th of January.